This episode is brought to you by Bento Box, a platform that connects restaurants with people. Learn more at getbento.com/openingsoon. That is getbento.com/openingsoon.
Hey, this is Hannah, HRN's program manager. It's HRN's 10th anniversary and now our summer fun drive. So show your support for independent, revolutionary, entertaining food radio by becoming a monthly recurring donor. HRN is powered by a passionate community of thoughtful eaters, and we need each and every one of you to show your support so that we can keep bringing you your favorite food podcasts. It takes a village, and every dollar donated, every listener tuning in is essential to our continued success. So set up a donation for $10 every month. You'll show us that you want to be a part of a bright future for HRN. And you'll get one of our brand new limited edition Pizza Pocket t-shirts. So snag your new favorite tea and show us some love, all for the price of about 2 fancy lattes each month. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate today, and thank you.
Welcome to Opening Soon on Heritage Radio Network. We are your hosts. I am Jenny Goodman.
And I'm Alex McCreary.
And if you're just tuning in to our first season, we are going through the business of opening restaurants, and we're talking to some of the world's greatest chefs and restaurateurs and industry leaders that will help take your idea to opening soon.
And just to give you a little background on who we are, if you haven't listened yet, Jenny and I are the founders and proprietors of Tillit NYC, which is a workwear brand. We're also the former proprietors of a rapidly declining restaurant that went down in 6 months, which is one of the reasons that we're here, asking people that have done it correctly to give some advice so that everyone out there that's learning and going through the process might have a little bit more intel on what to do right. Today we're joined with James Kent and Jeff Katz of Crown Chai in downtown Manhattan. Before we dive into their interview and conversation, we've got 5 quick takeaways from last week with Robert Bookman, who's a legal counsel in New York and advisor on getting liquor licenses and all the different kind of licenses you'll need before you open.
Yeah, so Robert had 30 years of liquor license experience. So basically his advice was get legal advice. Don't ever try to do it yourself because it'll just slow you down.
Get good legal advice.
Good, right. Pay for it. Good legal.
The second one was that there are 3 pillars to getting your liquor license to be aware of when you're starting your company, and that's the local input, which is the community board, the partners that you're working with, and then, of course, where everyone's money is coming from.
Yeah, and he mentioned this could change state to state, but it's pretty much similar all over the country. And then start your licensing process ASAP. So some people, you know, wait until after they sign the lease, but he was saying put provisions in your lease that are contingent upon getting a liquor license, and as soon as you sign a lease, one of the first things you should do is contact your liquor attorney.
And of course, always research, plan out your budget for licensing and permits, and don't forget the legal fees that'll go into that.
And then the other part was he's actually also an advisor to the Department of Health, which was super interesting. And he's on a committee trying to make it more business friendly to all of our business owners out there. So the hiring of an industry professional who consults and making sure that you get a good inspection from the beginning is really important to making sure you don't get those fines and all those kind of good stuff.
Cool. So that's last week. We're on to this week. And we're talking today on Opening Soon about ingredients, how you develop your menu, how you plan that, how you stay on brand with your menu within budget, and obviously create an amazing guest experience. And kind of over our lunch before the show, we kind of learned a little bit about James and Jeff's very interesting dynamic and how their different backgrounds have collided to form the culture that they now have at Crown Chai between the dining room and the kitchen.
So,
very good.
Yes, we're learning. We got scolded over lunch by James when I said FOH and BOH. Rightfully so, though. So today we are joined in the booth with James Kent and Jeff Katz of Crown Chai, which just opened in March. in the financial district. And James is the executive chef and partner, and he draws on his menu inspiration from all over the world and his childhood growing up in New York City. He also was the CDC at AMP and the executive chef at Nomad before opening this first solo venture with his partner, Jeff, who is also the general manager and helps to ensure and oversee the front of house. The dining room.
It takes time.
The dining room and guest experience. And Jeff is also the managing partner at Del Posto and has been there for 13 years and got 4-star review, the only Italian restaurant to still hold that, right?
Well, recently lost that one.
But while you oversaw it still. And these guys are just coming off a fresh, amazing review in the New York Times. So if you wanted to go to Crown Shy, you can still try to get a reservation, right?
We had a really good week. Pete Wells gave us a glowing 2 stars, and now the hordes have showed up to fill every seat. So we are very lucky. It's a good problem to have.
Yes. Very good problem to have.
I'm glad I went in April.
Ahead of the curve.
So tell us a little bit, because you guys come from both super, you know, have very prestigious backgrounds. You come from this really great world of fine dining, lots of great training, but you never worked together in the past. So tell us a little bit about how you guys came together and a little bit about like your philosophy.
We took a leap of faith.
We've
worked in these really big restaurants that tried to do great things and basically did. And I like to say I got lucky because James was out there looking for someone like me. And on paper, we look like a really strong couple. the places that we work are similar. They're big dining rooms doing really high-level service, high-level food. There's lots of private function space. There's huge teams, really big physical plant. And there's not a ton of restaurants that are like that. I mean, these, like, Posto's 24,000 square feet, and I don't know how big up. The Nomad's huge.
I don't know how big it is. I couldn't tell you.
It's really, really big. EMP's a really, really big space, mm-hmm. too. So, like, it just worked out in that way, you know? And I had to, on my side, sort of trust that the guy knew how to cook.
Right.
And I never forget that, like, first taste of food that we had. We were doing these dinners, and I was like, thank God.
Wait, so you signed on to be his partner before you actually even tasted his food?
Well, no, we obviously Jeff has eaten at the Nomad and 11 Madison Park,
right.
And as much of the food as mine, it's really I'm cooking for Daniel and with him and underneath him. So, you know, the first meal that we ate together was Thanksgiving at my house. And I remember either that night or the next day, he was like, the dude knows how to cook.
Did you, like, accidentally text that to somebody else and it went to James or something?
No, he, like, sent it to me.
He sent it to you. He's like, oh, it's okay. Signed, sealed, delivered. But you guys had already agreed to be partners before you had Thanksgiving dinner together.
Yes. Basically, that period of time, Del Posto was sort of in the review process, and my wife's family is in San Diego. Mm-hmm. They were all going home, and I was like, I can't leave right now. I've got to be here for this. And
so you were a Thanksgiving orphan.
I was a Thanksgiving orphan, and James invited me over to his house.
And then, so Jeff is half Puerto Rican. My wife is Puerto Rican. So we have a Puerto Rican Thanksgiving with turkey and pernil and all the like pasteles. And I'm like, yo, Jeff, dude, this is like home. This, like, come on down. And
sounds amazing. So we're coming up.
I know. Can I come over?
Yeah, of course.
That's amazing. So does your wife cook the Thanksgiving dinner?
She cooks nothing.
No. So you make all of, that's like in our household, Alex makes all the Jewish food because nobody else in my house can cook Jewish food, but that's not
true. No, Kelly, my wife is a professional eater.
Same.
And
I
Pilates
like your wife.
Instructor, so it's kind of.
She and I are like kindred spirits.
Love
like,
it.
Wow. How did you guys, you know, find out that you would be able to, did you do anything to kind of learn each other's character and
personality? Well, I think, you know, early on, it was like speed dating, essentially. You know, we went out and had dinner. We kind of vetted each other through friends of ours and colleagues. And, you know.
So you're calling around asking, like.
Early on in the process, you know, I got brought to this incredible building and it was just this huge project. And I'm like, I can't do this by myself. I need someone to help me with it. And I come from Make It Nice, where there's, you know, pretty equal partnership between Daniel and Will. And I wasn't looking to, like, hire a GM.
Right.
Like, I want a partner who can have my back and who can help me and do things that I'm not able to do. A good friend of ours introduced us. And, you know, I heard lots of great things, that he's tall, handsome.
All very true.
Well-dressed, stylish man with lots of sneakers.
James also is a sneaker fan with his, yes.
And, you know, early on in the process, they were like, you should reach out to Jeff. And I'm like, man, he runs a restaurant. It's successful. You know, like, I just don't think it's really an option. And then, you know, I just took a leap. And a dear friend of ours was like, yes, he's ready. He's your guy. And we had coffee at Del Posto, then we had dinner, and I brought him to the restaurant, and once you see the space, it's like hard to say no.
No one said no when they see upstairs.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it is. When the interview is going a little soft and you upstairs. Really want them, you just bring them upstairs.
So just for the audience, so Crown Chai, basically you have a restaurant in the bottom floor.
The lobby level. 70 Pine in the financial district.
And then there will be a second restaurant coming from floor 62 to 66. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah. So that's coming later in early 2019.
And I'm not sure if the going upstairs is about the view or they're just concerned that we might push them off the edge.
They're like, if you don't join my team, sign on the dotted line. So you guys met, you had this sort of like partnership dating. This was about 2 years before the restaurant opened, right?
Basically
2.5 years or so. So you come from these different worlds. How did you decide you were going to marry the philosophy of like, this is the dining room, we're not calling it, you know, front of house, we're not calling it back of house, we're calling it dining room and kitchen. How did that all work out for you?
I think like at this point, we're playing it by ear. You know, I have complete faith in Jeff that he comes from this amazing place and is very skilled and smart and good. You know, so like there may be things that we just assumed were like standards that now we are figuring out what makes sense and what works. And you know, like Jeff commented earlier at lunch that when we started service, the first day of friends and family, I called in a ticket and the team yelled, we, 50 people, as loud as they could. And Jeff was like, wow, that's crazy. That's like, that. I didn't sign up for this. You know, but it's just like we come from these different places and they both are incredible and great. And it's just finding a way to combine them and like the best practices of each restaurant is going to win.
Right.
And you know, I think like I've learned a lot from Jeff and the team that came from Del Posto, and I imagine that Jeff has learned a lot from the Make It Nice team.
Yeah, and we're only 3 months in here. You guys said that you had your restaurant failed in six. Like, we're only three in, so
you're off to a better start than we were. You're off to a very different start than we were.
Is the dining room primarily people from Del Posto experience, and the kitchen primarily do you have some mix there?
There's a mix. There's crossover from both places in both sort of, let's call them, departments.
And tell us again, because our listeners didn't hear really the ethos that goes in behind why it's not front of house, back of house.
Well, so this is a Make It Nice thing. We use the terms dining room and kitchen. You know, for me, they are two rooms in your home, and you guys are guests. And for me, you know, for us at Make It Nice, back of house and front of house, polarizing, complete opposites. And just like historically, there's this like power struggle between the dining room and kitchen that we just want to get rid of. And like, you know, E&P is wildly successful because there were two leaders that challenged each other, and it wasn't just like a kitchen driven restaurant or a dining room driven restaurant. There was balance, you know, and you know, they figured out how to make it work.
Right.
I mean, I think that's a really interesting point too for listeners and people who are planning what kind of philosophy that they're going to have, you know, is what do you do when there are people who are like, oh, I'm going to be a chef driven restaurant, or I'm going to be a hospitality driven restaurant. How do you marry those two concepts and then like educate your team that maybe didn't come from that philosophy previously?
I mean, I think if you look at it, it's kind of like, it's a big space. It's a huge project. There's another one down the road, and there's just no world where one of us would have been able to pull something like this off without having someone overseeing the other side that we could trust.
Right.
It's something that we're trying to carry through to the rest of the team now, just making sure that everybody starts off with like, hey, that guy probably knows what he's doing, so like, let's trust that they're doing it that way and that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. And it goes between the dining room and in the kitchen. Like in our world, in my world, I never used the term dining room kitchen exclusively like James was used to doing, but the idea is exactly the same, right? Like we're all in this doing this together, trying to put out you know, an incredible service under what can be really hard conditions. You're trying to, you know, you've got a lot of people. People want to come in. The you know, there's no room for walk-ins. It's intense services. There's always some VIPs. There's always some important someone in the room who needs extra hand-holding.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, we can't do the job with just half the team.
Right.
It just,
right.
We'd serve nothing or you'd have no one serving. And it, you know, like, you know, I don't know that it's so forward thinking because I feel like that's where things have evolved to. But I think in a restaurant where you may just have a chef who opened a restaurant, or you may just have a restaurateur who just opened a restaurant and hired a chef,
mm-hmm.
that it might feel different, you know? We're just lucky that we came with that, certainly that same sort of philosophy that we kind of need each other, and now we need our team to trust each other in the same way that we trust each other.
Have you guys done any like team building exercises to make your team?
We are playing volleyball next week.
Yep.
All right.
In the next couple of weeks.
Will that be dining room versus?
No. There's no. Just one,
won't be that way.
One big area.
One, just bouncing the ball around. Teams,
yeah. No, you know, I think competition is important. Friendly, you know, it kind of keeps people on their toes.
Yeah. I like the idea that you're working toward, everyone understanding that you're working toward a common goal. We had John Seibert from Tail Up Goat, and they actually have their kitchen crew do one day in the dining room. To kind of understand that the end of their job in the kitchen is not the plate of food. It's when the plate of food gets eaten by the guest and the reaction that they have. And I think it really, you know, speaks to the same kind
same
of thing
philosophy.
That we're all here for one reason.
I think the one plus that we have is we are such an open kitchen. If, you know, for anyone that has been there, it's like you are dining in this huge room that is part of a huge kitchen. You know, so you see the cooks working. You see them struggling if they're struggling, or you know, like you feel the energy of the kitchen, and you know, likewise, we see the dining room staff hustling and working, and you know, it's not just these hidden rooms that you don't know what's happening,
right?
You know, so there's empathy, and you see like what it takes to really make it work, you know,
right. So take us back to the beginning. You were working on this for over 2 years, right, before you guys opened 3 months ago. When did menu planning, development, when did that start? Did that start immediately?
Well, I think early on, we knew that the downstairs restaurant was going to be casual. And it's an elegant restaurant, but it's, you know, kind of high casual. I don't even understand.
High
it's
casual.
Fancy for mom.
It's fancy.
That's for sure.
It's fancy
for
mom.
For my mom, it's fancy.
But, okay. You know, it's...
I like it.
You know, I've never really cooked food like this and served food in an environment like this. So it's something that we, I wouldn't say struggled with, but we worked through for the past 2 years of like, how are we going to treat the food and how are we going to serve it to the guest? And we knew that we wanted it to be delicious, high level, most important thing. And then we wanted it to be kind of like robust, kind of a little spicier than I'm used to, a little more flavor, just kind of like high levels on all levels with the food. And I think we've pulled it off. You know, the food is
tasty.
Something
else you talked about and over lunch was about how fun the space is as well. And that, how does that play in with the menu that you were thinking of?
I think that one of the things we did when it came to service was to pull away all of the things that were just sort of like the trappings of super fine dining that I think we were both really used to. And they were just like rules that we just said, that one doesn't matter because
like
the only thing that matters is like being efficient with the service. Let's not spend time like doing all the like pomp and circumstance, but let's spend time like joking with the guests or having a good time or, you know, talking through the menu a little bit longer as opposed to like having to leave the table to get a tray to go back to the table to clear the glasses. It's like the guy hands you a glass, don't freak out, like take the glass and put it in the dish station. And like just little things like that. It's not that we want sloppy service, and I don't think we have sloppy service, but we want service that's like efficient so that we can give the guests more of our time if they want it and not to have it be things that maybe don't matter. So like, you know, you go to a fancy, really fancy restaurant and the guys take the plates, they go down. Like it's basically synchronized swimming. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
It's a beautiful service. Yeah. That's just not what this restaurant was supposed to be. This was supposed to be like, let's have a joke, let's take a shot of tequila, and let's at the same time like eat like food that's like punching above its weight class, and let's give it a value that feels like, hey, you know what, like I could probably go there once a week and not feel like I have to break the bank.
Are you seeing regulars do that?
So yeah, many regulars.
We've awesome. Had people dine with us 10, 15 times.
Wow. Yeah. In 3 months?
Yeah, in
damn.
3 months.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
They're like, screw you, Pete Wells, and your glowing review. No, I'm
and
just
then,
kidding.
You know, as far as the food, the idea was like, how many steps can we strip away and not have the food suffer? You know, 11 Madison Park is very elegant. There's lots of steps. There's lots of hands. You could probably have something taste very similar with a few less steps. And that was, you know, definitely important to me because it's a big restaurant. We want to work with less cooks in the kitchen,
right?
Because labor is a huge cost these days.
Yeah.
And so, like, steps, take them away.
Did you guys always have the same vision for this? Were you like, or was this something you like workshopped, or were you like, it's going to be fun? The food's going to be
well. We like, so our office was on the 60th floor of 70 Pine. Beautiful, beautiful apartment, four bedroom penthouse. And we did 20 dinners for the tenants of the building where we got to workshop all the food, workshop the playlist, plates, glasses, steps of service.
Workshop the playlist for them.
We did.
Wow, they're experiential.
Yeah, so we were able to kind of really work through the food.
And then did you have a lot of feedback and notes, or do you guys sort of stay in your lanes in terms of like service and food, or how does that work?
I think that there was less sort of, because service was a little weird. It was like serving a group of 20 in a non-restaurant setting. But certainly like there was feedback on food, and we really pushed the people who sat down to say something, you know? And at that time we were really having a hard time defining the food. That was a really big thing we spent a lot of time on, and had a hard time coming to terms with it. We basically were going to be called New American.
Why was that so hard? Because you come from European backgrounds?
I think more just like the for me at least, like New American's not mouthwatering. Like, you know, like I want
to your food's pretty fucking mouthwatering, I have to say. Yeah, but yeah, but I hear here. You. Yes, yeah, we can good. Swear. Yeah, you can use curse words. Cool.
Good. Fuck. Hey, but you know, but these categories, like that's not a sexy category.
No.
Right. Yeah, you're like, I'm going out to get sushi or like
you get it.
Whatever it is.
Right.
It's like, I'm going to a New American restaurant tonight. It sounds terrible. So we'd like debated it. And you know, Jeff comes from this Italian restaurant that like it makes sense, like you know what you're walking into. And I'm like, yeah, what is the Nomad? What's 11 Madison Park? Like what, you know, what category of restaurant other than like elegant fine dining or like cool, hip, fun restaurant, you know? So we, you know, we're attempted to put language to it. And for me, it was always like seasonal food. Roots are from Europe because it's the food that I've essentially cooked most of my life. And just tasty. And that's it. And our first day that we opened, there was a someone from Thrillist, and they kind of nailed it on the head. Like this restaurant, there's no like North Star, and I'm paraphrasing, but what they do is cook food that people want to eat and make it really delicious. And I'm like, wow, that's what we've been saying for the past like
you're
6 months.
Wow, nailed it.
Yeah, it was amazing. It felt really good.
Yeah.
And it allowed us to like push forward and really like understand that we had something that was great.
Cool. So don't stress if you don't have a category. Wait for Thrillist to come in and try to nail it for you. Good lesson learned.
Well, no, I think like I know what food I cook.
Right.
You know, and I understand what's important to me. And, you know, trying to put language to these things are oftentimes challenging.
Yeah.
Like I know that I want to cook seasonal food. I know that local is really important. I know that we want to treat the product simply, not complicate things. But like, how does that translate to like a bullet point on Yahoo or whatever it is?
You know? It's also like being really careful to not try to define what you're doing by saying what you're not.
Right.
And that's like a place that I think happens quite a bit. Like, we're not a steakhouse.
Right.
This is not an omakase counter. Right. We're not farm to table. So great. So what are you?
Right.
Right. And we're just, I think that this is the first restaurant that we did. And so hopefully we get an opportunity to do more and things go really well. And at some point, maybe we'll get lucky and someone will like magic wordsmith the most like beautiful sentence of what the food is like.
It's right. fun Do you think and it's imperative delicious.
To like have that nailed down before you start? Or
well, I think that we tried to get to that place and we never got all the way there. And at some point we were just like, you know what? Like the food, here's the food, here's the menu. People are going to look at it. They'll come in. Once they've had it once, if they like it, it doesn't matter. Right. It doesn't matter anymore. Like, and I had a harder time with it maybe because of my background, and I struggled with, we need people, like, when you're like, hey, let's go out to dinner, the first thing you say, maybe if you're not in New York City, you say something like, awesome, can we go get sushi or steak, or can we get, and you say by, like, what it is you want. Right. I think in New York, like, we have a slightly different perspective on it, because there's so many restaurants, there's so many new restaurants, there's always a place to go, and they're not all defined.
Do you think it was hard for you to translate that to the guest? Like what genre it's been? Because I mean, it hasn't hurt you guys. You have butts and seats every night and all those kind of things.
Not really. You know, I feel like it's interesting. I get a lot of people that come in and say, there's not a restaurant that this can easily be compared to.
I would
agree.
And
it's humbling. And it's like, you know, like, okay, Miles Davis played what isn't here. Like, he was this forward thinker. He was our muse at 11 Madison Park. And it's like, that's what we want to do. We want to be the next generation of restaurateurs, of chefs, of operators, of, like, you know, hospitality, you know, peeps. You know, so, like, for us to create this restaurant, and for us, we were just like, what's the best? How do we make it great? Let's debate it. Let's challenge every norm, all these, like, things that we've had in the past, the non-negotiables that, like, we always did this. Like, fuck that. Here's our opportunity to challenge it. You know, we're writing our own rules. And I think with the people in the room, there were 10 people that were like super important of like building this and drafting the language and the thought. And, you know, we've created something that's really special, and it's humbling. It's incredibly humbling.
The menu you have today, is it the same menu you opened with?
No, this version 2.7 or 8, we number all the menus.
Okay.
So whenever we adjust it, we change the version. Seasonally will be the first digit, and then any variation, any version that we adjust is the version.
When do you up version? How, like, small or big are the changes?
Well, early on it was super challenging. We're like, we just learned how to cook this food.
Now you're changing.
And we opened March 18th, and spring was March 19th, or whatever it was, and we were cooking winter food. So we, you know, it's just tough.
But basically, it's anytime there's the decimal point changes anytime a new dish changes. Whatever it might be. It could be one, it could be five.
Or if we add, like, you know, raw almonds onto something, green almonds.
Then you will upversion it if you just, like, add one garnish?
Maybe not, but, like we will definitely adjust it. And
so you're on round 8 of
the summer menu?
2.8, something like that. No, summer, we changed a dish this weekend. We're changing a dish today. We're trying not, at EMP and the Nomad, EMP, we changed it on one day. We changed, like, 12 things on one day. It was like opening a new restaurant. At Nomad, we would do 2 menu changes. Half the menu one week, half the menu the next week. Now, we're 3 months old. We're a toddler. We're a baby.
Right.
So still, like, we don't have the systems. We, you know, and it's something that we've learned.
I'm very happy with doing it this way, by the way.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, so that's how I'm used to doing it.
Yeah,
when I heard early on, he was like, we changed the menu. Like, we do all these in one day. I was like,
changing the menu doesn't just fall on the cooks. It's a big
training for
education.
And that's when we go back to this dining room and kitchen collaboration. Right. Where it's like kitchen driven, like, I'm changing the menu. I don't care about the dining room. Like, they need to deal with it.
Learn it.
And it's like, no. And what we did really well at the Make It Nice World, we would, like, weeks in advance, we would have the food ready. We'd have menus written. We'd have, you know, educational packets. We're not there. We're sliding in head first. We're Pete Rose rounding third. Like, and we're like, you know, we are not where we want to be, you know, but we're doing really well where we are at this moment. And I think, like, we've said this internally is, that once we really start clicking and everything is really starts making sense, just how great this restaurant can be and these two places.
I think that, like, James and I, because we sort of sit at the top of each side, so to speak, we get to look, like, we can look at the team and be like, this is going to be something fucking incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And the struggles that they feel right now are ones that will take time to go and get better. But, like, I know I look at the group and I'm like, this, like, you know, this team is insanely strong, you know, and, like, getting them, like, I think just getting everybody to be comfortable with that idea that, like, guys, this is exactly where we're supposed to be doing what we're supposed to do.
What's the trust factor that you guys talked about earlier with understanding each other?
Yeah, I think, so we spoke about trust earlier at lunch. And like I said, I trust Jeff, and Jeff is a professional. And, you know, the people that work for us may not necessarily have the same trust for their counterparts. They may or they may not, but it's like you earn and you slowly learn and you get better. And you know, the only way that we really succeed and we become this great restaurant is if we all 100% trust and love and support each other.
I think that stems from the top too. So it's like if your team sees that you and they trust, that, right. then that's 100%. how it's.
I mean, I think also that in our dynamic, the teams themselves so heavily came from our past mm-hmm. that they trust us at least individually. So there's something there to go on. Like they have to, I mean, I would assume, and if any of you guys are listening, like I love you all.
Don't leave us.
I have to assume that somewhere in there they trust us and they trust us at least individually. And certainly like with the past, you know, many of the people on the management team and have been on the project for almost a year in some capacity they've been participating. And I mm-hmm. think that they, you know, it was, we had a really amazing opportunity to be able to open the restaurant the way that we did, having that space that James was talking about, doing these dinners for people in the building, like giving us a chance to work on all that stuff, but also getting to sit around the table with all of these people for 10, 12 months without the stress of actual service.
Right.
You know, like it was the honeymoon phase.
Yeah.
And then we got into like, we got back from the honeymoon and now that's where we are today,
right.
You know?
So we're going to take a super quick break to hear from our friends at Bento Box, and then we'll hear all about being newlyweds, I guess.
Nice.
Yeah. Old Ebbitt Grill is Washington, D.C.'s oldest saloon. It was founded in 1856 as a boarding house, which has been known to host past presidents and military heroes. After numerous relocations, it moved in 1983 for the final time to the Beaux Arts Building, once an old theater and historic landmark. Antique beer steins, classical oil paintings, and taxidermy adorn its rich wooden interiors. Bento Box connected Old Ebbitt Grill with people by designing a new website that highlights their private event spaces and distinguished ambiance. Old Ebbitt Grill is one of 4,000 restaurants that's powered by Bento. Visit getbento.com/openingsoon to learn more.
All right, welcome back. Again, we're joined with Jeff Katz and James Kent of Crown Shy. And we're talking about a lot of things, mostly the dynamic between dining room and kitchen, as well as the menu.
Nailed it.
There it is.
We got it.
Fluid now. I got it.
Yeah.
Can I get a job? one of my questions is, when you're doing the menu and you're doing all these iterations, are there parameters that keep you on brand, that keep you local, that keep you seasonal?
Yeah, I think so. We are opening another restaurant in several months on the top of the building, which will be an elegant, elevated restaurant. So we need to make sure that these two restaurants in the same building need to be different. Yeah. And I think downstairs, there's no luxury ingredients. We're never going to put foie gras or truffle or a langoustine or a turbo or things like that. All the food is pedestrian. You know, it's not
pedestrian, but delicious.
Well, so, I feel like... it's a chicken, but it's a chicken that is grown in Pennsylvania that is fed our scraps from the restaurant to finish it. It's like, you know, it's not a bad product, but it's not like a poulet de Brest from France that we're flying in.
Is that what upstairs will be all?
Well, no.
Truffles and lobster.
we'll definitely be using luxury ingredients. TBD. And, you know, people, it's just a different dining experience. But downstairs, we want fun. We want cool. We want you to like be able to sit back and not feel like it's uptight. You don't want to go and like have to stand up or sit up straight and feel like you're at your grandma's house for dinner.
Right, like you might be scolded if you're slouching.
No.
Just because you said about the chicken, I just want to make sure I heard that right. So the chicken is fed scraps from the restaurant. Are you working with like a farm?
Well, so it's Green Circle Chicken, which is a bird that D'Artagnan grew for us at Love Madison Park, and we would send them scraps. We'd send them like celery roots and whatnot. To kind of finish the feed on
That's
scraps
really
of the
cool.
restaurant, basically how birds were raised. on farms in the past. And basically now D'Artagnan learned the feeding, finishing, and kind of use the scraps that they generate.
Interesting.
But initially it was like this
full circle
right. life. And we get ahead and feed on. They're you know, essentially they run around the field. They're these beautiful little birds. They live a good life. You know, so it's not that we are trying to get the cheapest, you know, things for the menu. It's just like we know that it's a value-driven restaurant. We want people to come and be able to dine there several times a week, a month.
Some people have been there 15 times.
You know, so it's just about upstairs, yeah. a bit more luxury, more of a narrative, tasting menu, and then downstairs is just this fun, cool, laid-back, chill, delicious restaurant.
And if you're not in New York City and want to see James make said chicken, you can check out a clip from this morning's Today Show.
Yeah, so I'm doing lots of press today.
Lots of press. So James has like been up since 4 o'clock in the morning prepping chickens. So thank you for being here.
Butts and seats, people. Butts come on.
I think let's go into, we like to do a fun little lightning round with our guests. So just like 1 to 2 word quick answers, top of the head. Yeah. So I'll just kick it off. What have been your number of days off since opening?
Damn it. I just took last week off.
the whole week?
Wow.
I took the whole week
off. Yeah. So we, early on, it was probably like a 50 days. Jeff and I were taking, we got to the point where Jeff and I would swap a Sunday. But, you know, we got to a point where I'm going to Mexico next week, which is unheard of.
And our
team, our AGM is in Napa Valley. She's taking 5 days. My chef de cuisine, I'm making everyone take some time. Our pastry chef, you know, we're opening another restaurant in 6 months, and we need to have time for ourselves. It's about balance. And you said 2 words. I apologize, but like balance.
No, that's okay. This is great.
Balance is a huge.
No, we're big advocates for balance.
Huge, yeah. It's a huge aspect of my life, man. Because restaurants take everything.
Yeah.
They take your health. You know, your sanity, your time, everything. So it's like you need to fight for what's right, for your family, for the people that are outside of the walls of these restaurants.
It's definitely one of the like benefits of doing big restaurants with big teams, because it's like when one guy goes away, and when there's only 6 people working there, it's really hard to deal with it. Yeah. But when you're 100... and you've got other people in coverage, and we don't have it figured out. Like, we need more people. We certainly need that.
They're hiring.
Come on down.
Like, yeah, come on down.
No, but that's a good, I mean, it's a good thing. It's, and we talk a lot about culture on this show, and how do you create a good culture, and like time off and wellness and looking at things holistically, like a career is really important in the industry.
It's
so it's good to hear that you support
that. And again,
that.
I start to the top. So it's
Our, like, you know, the mission statement for us as a company has always been to create restaurants that everybody wants to come back to. And that, I think, started with thinking about the team even before the guest, because if the team doesn't want to come back, they're not going to give an experience that is one that you want to come back to as a guest. And we're, you know, it's a new restaurant, so we're still trying to figure out how to make that perfect, but it's like top of mind as we make decisions, as we do things, as we think about what the future looks like. Like, you know, I got to go to work and I'd rather be on the beach with my family. But if I'm going to have to go back there, I want to do it with people who I want to be around every day.
Yeah. But isn't that the goal? We work hard so that we can be on the beach with our family. And
I just want to stay there.
Retire. I've been talking about retiring for 10 years now.
Yeah, it's never going to happen. Chefs don't retire. Yeah. Chefs work forever.
Yes. Unfortunately. Go ahead.
What's we just talked about a little bit about a menu change. What's the ingredient you're most excited about right now?
I don't know. It's, you know, it's tough to say. It, you know, every year it's, you know, spring shows up and it's the same stuff. It's,
yeah.
You know, like there are no like hidden ingredients. It's not like as a young cook, like, wow, this is a watermelon radish. I've never seen that before.
Talk to Dan Barber and Rose 7 Seed.
No, I know. But for me, it's like, so it's really just about, okay, how do you stay fresh? How do you challenge yourself to work with things and treat them differently? And then there are those things like, I always cook this asparagus this way because it's amazing and I love it. So it's just about like challenging yourself each season and trying to find new ways to treat food. And, you know, it's the summer, like tomatoes, peaches, plums, cherries, you know, it's not one ingredient. You know, it's just the bounty of what's going to show up.
What about you, Jeff? What's the dining room most excited about?
I think, at least for me, one of the things I've really enjoyed is building the playlist for the restaurant, and I'm working a lot.
Jeff is the resident DJ.
I'm working
so
on
give it up to Jeff if you enjoy that playlist. It's very important.
I'm working a lot on the restaurant playlist for upstairs now, because it's not just we play it downstairs in Crown. We play a ton of hip hop, but it's not just hip hop. It's almost more like a vibe that like might be hip hop, but like just maybe makes you want to nod your head. That has like a fair amount of like instrumentation, and upstairs we're like working on what that upstairs vibe is going to be like. And I think music for us, and you know, like we don't want to be the dining room that's like this fancy place where there's no music going. Like there's going to be music in every single one of our spaces, and it's not going to necessarily just be background.
Do you feel like you're impacted by what like the kitchen's planning on the menu? Like, does that change for you seasonally, or just it's like an overall, like this is sort of what we
want?
Yeah,
I don't know that it like has menu. Like what I do is make sure that the list grows as the night goes on. So if you pop in at 5:30, it feels pretty chill, and by the time you get to like 8:30, at least a Crown.
Yeah, there's like Wu-Tang playing.
Yeah, it's much more energetic, and so
I'll be looking for that tomorrow night when we come in for dinner.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it just has to feel right for the timing, you know.
And I think also like, you know, having music translate to a certain dish, it just seems forced, you know.
Yeah.
It's like not authentic. It's like let's make a story work. You know, it's like it's one thing if it really worked. If there's a song that Jeff is like, yo, I ate my first pear to this thing and it's super important.
Like, can you imagine? That's going to be a thing, though.
No, but like, I think, so for me, authenticity is huge.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, we created a restaurant for us. It wasn't for a critic. It wasn't for Michelin or the Times. It was, you know, it's like, we want to create restaurants that we want to go to and that our staff wants to go to. And like, there's a picture of Biggie Smalls on the wall. It's been on my wall for the past 20 years. It's like the one cool thing that I've owned, like an actual original.
Did you see that like the apartment that he lived in is for rent?
Yeah, we're moving in.
It's like $4,000.
It's like $4,000.
That's our office apartment.
Our office, staff apartment.
Going from the 63rd floor
to St. James Place.
Yeah.
And, you know, the restaurant, we created a fun place for us, you know? And I lost my train of thought, but...
No,
Biggie throws me off.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, like, we did talk a lot about that. Like, we got to build a restaurant that at least we want to go back to. And although all the reviews came in, like, really strong, we spend a lot of time talking about how the review brings a guest in once, and what happens at the table will bring them back over and over and over again.
That's extremely true.
And so, like, the review season's over. It's done. Like, we, you know, like, there'll be other, like, smaller, great press pieces, hopefully, that'll continue to come out. But at the end of the day, like the ones in New York, like the big ones, for the most part, are all in, and they went well. And now it's on us to, one, live up to the expectation that the review set. Mm-hmm. Like, we've had a couple issues, just back to music. Like, we've had guests come in who don't like hip-hop.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, like, we can't vanilla the whole project down just because someone doesn't like a particular genre. It's just we chose this as part of how it feels in here.
Yeah.
So you kind of like have to like it or not. But if we made the restaurant like vanilla, then we would lose most of the people who would just say, this is boring. It doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
And so once in a while, we have to have that conversation. And the reviews haven't talked much about the music, which it's totally normal.
Right.
But it's present. Right. It's a present thing in our room, you know, and we like music.
Yeah.
You know,
we definitely have guests. Oftentimes they walk out, they're like, everything is incredible, the playlist is bomb.
Yeah.
And like, I'm in the kitchen.
Wow, that's awesome.
Like all night long. And I'm in the kitchen bobbing my head.
Yeah.
And my sous chef was like, you know, I'm like, I'm afraid to bob my head. I consciously try not to. I'm like, dude, enjoy your life, bro. Yeah. Enjoy it. Like, this is.
But I think that translates to the guest experience too. And
yeah, for sure.
Like, enjoying.
When you see the people that are serving you, that they enjoy things and they're having a good time, it just makes you happy.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll say also that, I mean, we're all sort of the same age, I think, that basically hip-hop from the 90s is oldies.
I know, I love it, though.
It's like oldies now. Like, that music's been around for a long
for
time.
A long
it's 30
time.
Years
we're
old.
So old. Yeah.
If you get from the 80s, it's like vintage.
Whoa.
You know,
so vintage.
It's just...
Like, hip-hop.
I know,
you
know it like, is. It's like what I grew up on, too.
This is the dining public. Like, New York's a relatively, like, sort of exciting, like, energetic city that has a lot of like people who are now our age, and that's what they listen to.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody, but it's oldies.
Yeah.
You know.
Hip-hop is oldies, folks.
Hip-hop is oldies. I don't feel
you
cool
heard it
anymore.
Here first.
We actually had a hip-hop guy in the room last night, and someone... Did you change the track?
Yeah.
Did you do it?
A song... So we had a... we had a hip-hop old school...
A legend.
Legend come in, yeah. And yeah? The song came on, and we passed the track.
Yeah.
You so skipped it.
You skipped it. Why? No, I was just like,
you know, I feel like sitting in the room and...
You're awkward.
Yeah.
If you hear the track, you'd be like, oh, yeah.
It's just one of those tracks
that, like, starts off and you're like, everybody knows it. And it's a classic, like, incredible track.
That's funny.
Interesting. All right, we'll run through two more.
Yeah.
Then we'll call it. What's the favorite thing on the menu at the moment?
I eat the chicken every night.
Chicken every night.
Chicken every night.
Number one ordered thing on the menu.
Sticky toffee pudding.
Yeah,
really?
Really?
Is it sticky toffee or?
I think it's sticky toffee pudding.
What about the number one ordered entree?
Chicken.
The chicken.
Yeah.
Is that a chicken for two? Is it?
Everything is for two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And nothing is for two.
There are no rules.
It's half a bird. How hungry are you?
Yeah.
You
know?
Yeah.
That's what it is. Got it's a decent sized half bird too.
All the food is meant to be shared. So the goal is for you to taste as much stuff as possible.
We'll remember that.
Yeah. Cool. You want to give a couple shout outs?
Yeah. So we always like to shout out our friends who are opening soon. These guys just opened soon. I mean, technically 3 months. Anybody? Friends, fam.
I'm so underwater as to what's going on out there in the real world.
Tunnel
right now.
Vision.
A little bit.
Doesn't have to be New York. Anybody else you can think of?
We've just been so focused on opening our restaurant.
I know.
We don't know what else is going on.
I'm
going
to get that call from my friend who's like, why did you shoot me out? What the fuck? You had a chance.
All right. Well, I have a couple. So Chef Chloe is back with her supernatural pop-up at Tom Colicchio's Craft just for the summer. So if you're into vegan food, go check her out.
Nice.
Until the end of the summer. She's also just a lovely human being. And then the other one isn't really a restaurant, but our friends Jocelyn and Erica just launched their Butchers. They were at White Gold, and they just launched their CPG brand, which is called J&E Small Goods. And you can order it online or get it at, like, Meckleburg's.
Ours are in the mail.
I ordered some today. I'm so excited. But they're really awesome. So
cool.
Check that out.
Next week, join us as we talk about building a brand that can outlast your lease. We'll have Nikki Russ Fetterman and Josh Russ Tupper of famed appetizing multi-channel business Russ and Daughters.
And not just outlast your lease, but 100 years. I just like to point out.
Yeah, they have
a 100-year-old restaurant.
Strong.
Strong.
Strong contract.
Yeah.
They know a thing or two about brand and expanding it, so that they'll be fun to chat with. Special thanks again to James and Jeff of Crown Chai. We're super excited to be in for dinner tomorrow night. Everyone else, try and do your best to book early. Is there like an online booking system that we have to
jump on? You
can
go right onto the website and book, and it books up.
Was it 30 days in
advance? 30 days.
30 days. Yeah.
So all go right. on 30 days.
Catch it in the end of July. And then if you dropped your notebook in the linen hamper, we've got your back. You can check our blog on tillitnyc.com to catch our wrap up from today with key points. Where do we find you guys on social?
I'm jcats411.
Chef James Kent.
And the restaurant is Crown Chai NYC?
NYC, yeah.
NYC. Cool. And the website's Crown Chai NYC?
Yeah, crownshy.nyc.
Yeah.
crownshy.nyc, and they're located at 70 Pine Street.
Reservations.
Yeah, yep. crownshy.com works also. It's all the same.
Cool. Follow us on Heritage Radio. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or anywhere else you get your podcast. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at @weareopeningsoon and @tillitnyc. And that'll do it for today. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for being here, guys.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Peace, y'all.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.